Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 116 of the Frontside Podcast. I'm David Keithley, a software developer here at Frontside, and I'll be your host for today's episode. Joining me as a co-host is Jeffrey Cherawati.
Hey there.
And we've got an amazing guest with us today, Chris Van Houten. Chris is the author of a very interesting functional CSS library called Elasis, a good friend of mine. And today we're going to be talking about how that compares with another new pattern I've been seeing everywhere recently, styled components. Hi, Chris.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Doing great. Let's just go ahead and jump into things. If, Chris, you want to give us a little introduction to your functional CSS library.
Yeah, for sure. So I guess first a little bit about me. I've been primarily a front-end developer for about 7 or 8 years now. I don't know, at some point you start losing count. Mm-hmm. But over the years, worked largely within the Ember framework, but I've also worked within React and Vue. And I feel like most developers over the years, you tend to acquire an affinity towards certain areas of software development. And for me, those areas tend to lean towards accessibility, but also learning how to write CSS with what I call like the future in mind. And so try to keep the story as short as possible. But a couple of years ago, I was working on a project and started to realize that, you know, our CSS is one of those things that just continues to grow over time, along with the rest of our application. But I also noticed that we tend to have a lot of areas of repetition within our CSS. So like, how many times are we setting text align to center? How many times are we setting the text color to the primary color or to gray or something of that nature? And just thought, you know, maybe we could, you know, create a utility library that just does all this stuff for us, similar to how, if you've ever worked with Bootstrap, they have utility classes that allow you to do some things like set the text alignment or the text color or font size, things of that nature. And so I started tinkering around with it, but eventually I changed jobs and then that idea kind of just went to the side. But then I'd say about a year and a half, 2 years ago, I came across a blog post called 15 kilobytes of CSS is all you'll ever need. And so immediately I was intrigued. And it was actually a blog post on Medium that was talking about the benefits of using something like Tachyons or Base CSS, which are two different functional CSS libraries. And to explain what I mean by functional CSS, it's just a whole library, a whole arsenal of these utility classes that just do one or two things that allow you to basically take any design and implement it by composing all these classes together throughout your HTML. So I was looking at Tachyons, looking at Base CSS and thinking like, you know, like there's a couple of things I like to customize about this. But at the time when I was looking at it, I couldn't really figure out how to customize those values very easily. And so I did what every developer does and just decided to make my own. And that's where Elasis came into play, where it's a CSS library that is entirely made up of functions that generate your CSS based off of the value of variables in SAS. And so everything is customizable all the way down to how the class names look and the syntax that you use. So if you hate what I'm doing, you can customize it very easily. And so a lot of people might wonder, why would you want to use functional CSS? What are the benefits that you get out of it? And really, one of the first two things that comes to mind for me that really attracted me to it was that your CSS files start small and they stay small. For the most part, depending on the configuration and the particular library that you're using, your entire CSS payload can be anywhere from 10 to 20 kilobytes minified and gzipped, which is in stark contrast to some other projects I've worked on where just one of the many CSS files you're downloading are 745 kilobytes. So dramatic improvements there. So that's why it was instantly appealing to me. But one of the other nice things you kind of get for free by default is a consistent design pattern right out of the box. Because if you're working on a large team that has maybe multiple designers and many developers, you know, one designer might implement something with a spacing system that's maybe based on 5 pixels. So your padding, your margins, your widths might be 5, 10, 15, 30 pixels, 45 pixels. But then maybe another designer is implementing something based off of more like material design, which is like base 4 pixels. So it's like 4 pixels, 8 pixels, 16, so on. And over time, little differences like this can really show up as you navigate between pages of your application. And with functional CSS, you're given a limited number of options to choose from. And as a result, it actually makes your application feel like it's one cohesive, consistent piece of software between pages and between the features that you're navigating through. And so, you know, those are really the two areas that have really attracted me to functional CSS, and I guess it's a TLDR, if that was a TLDR, in fact, of what functional CSS is and why I like it.
All right. Yeah. So one of the things we've got here is, what is the problem that functional CSS and styled components are both trying to solve?
Like I said earlier, a lot of the applications that many of us might be working on, they tend to grow with time by either adding features or rewriting and improving existing features. And in JavaScript, over the years, we have made tremendous improvements in our tooling with things like code splitting and tree shaking to really limit and minimize the amount of payload that we're sending to our users at the end of the day. But really, it's only up until recently, we haven't really been talking about how we do that for CSS. And typically, as developers, we have deadlines, we're working within sprints. And so we have, you know, really strict time constraints on what we can work on and for how long. And so we tend to focus on making sure the features look right, they work right, and that our tests pass. And CSS cleanup is just one of those things that often doesn't get cleaned up as often as we would like. And sometimes that's also because we assume that a particular set of styles is probably getting used by another team working on a completely different set part of the application. And so as a result of just not being able to work on this problem or this issue, we likely have many, many kilobytes of orphan styles being shipped to our users at the end of the day, and our style sheets tend to grow over time. And if there's one thing that's kind of become a mantra within software development over the last few years, it's that every kilobyte matters. So yeah, one of the main reasons I wanted to come and talk to you guys today was about, you know, some things that I've been tinkering with on the side just to figure out how we solve this problem. And so the approach of using functional CSS is one of those things, but using something like styled components, which is a mostly used in React library of it's a solution of writing your CSS in your JavaScript. And that's another approach to how to tackle this problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting thing you said there. I remember whenever I started off in software development, one of the big no-nos for styling is don't put your styles in your JavaScript. So it's mm-hmm. interesting to see that has kind of changed.
Yeah, indeed. I remember I was listening to a podcast about 2, maybe 3 years ago, and they had a panel on and they were talking about, there's this new thing called CSS and JS. And I was like screaming in my car, like, this is the most horrible thing in the world you could possibly do. Why would someone want to do this? And obviously over the last, you know, few years, the technology has definitely matured and they definitely hardened it to where when I was working on updating my personal blog, working on moving it over to Gatsby, you know, I didn't want to have to pull in an entire functional CSS library because I kind of thought that would be overkill for just a couple small pages. And so I was like, let me try this whole style component thing. That way, if I'm going to hate it, I can at least hate it from an experienced point of view. And I actually found that the developer experience of working with style components was really nice. And so I kind of became converted over to that way of thinking about, you know, I'm not a hater of it no more. It's actually a really nice way to write your CSS for either your blog or your applications.
Mm-hmm. So I count myself still as a skeptic about this whole idea. So I'm excited that we're going to talk about it now. And you have the opportunity to sell me on it, which should be fun. So kind of some of the work I've been doing a lot lately, we've been doubling down on the idea of CSS modules, you know, that at least fix some of the encapsulation and problems around CSS where everything's ending up in a global scope. How do these ideas of functional CSS kind of take that even further? You know, what advantages are there over using just simply using, say, CSS modules where we're fixing the global namespace?
Yeah, so I'd say with functional CSS, the things that come to mind for me are just you keep the file size small. You have your design patterns that are kind of, you get them for free right out of the box. Your styles are pretty low specificity, meaning that if you ever have a need to where you need to really customize something because you just can't do a functional CSS, which I found to be very, very few and far between as far as the number of instances I've come across, it's very easy to overwrite if you need to go back into the, I guess, old-fashioned way of actually, you know, writing some CSS yourself. But then you also have the benefit of not having to come up with clever class names to describe the different states or different use cases of your component that you're working on or, you know, just the feature that you're trying to implement. And so I'd say those are definitely some of the pros of why I like using functional CSS at the end of the day. I will say that there are some cons, you know, I'll be completely honest and say that, you know, one of the areas where functional CSS tends to have a weak spot is in the area of browser specific issues. So in my experience, I tend to have a lot of issues with iOS Safari, and it's like the bane of my existence sometimes worse than IE 11. But if you have to really target something that's exclusively for, you know, a specific browser, that's really not doable from what I've seen in functional CSS. So that's where you actually have to go back in and, you know, handwrite some CSS for that kind of situation. But also one of the cons is that, you know, sometimes depending on the element or the component that you're trying to style, I think of the example of if you have a nav bar that can toggle between being a sidebar, but also a top nav bar, you know, that's a completely different set of styles. And to achieve those two layouts at the end of the day. And so you'll have to have a completely different collection of class names that you'll have to toggle between based off of the state of that component or that feature that you're working on. And while that's doable, especially with something like, you know, a front-end framework like Vue, React, or Ember, it's just a little pain point that sometimes you have to work around. But I say those are the, you know, the pros and admittedly some of the cons of using something like functional CSS to tackle your styling needs.
So my favorite thing that you mentioned there was how hard naming is. That's I think everyone can agree very strongly that just naming things is the hardest thing. Let's be real. What has been your experience like kind of learning these? They're almost new domain languages, right? For, hey, we want a padding of this amount. Have you found that pretty easy to get up to speed and get fluent in? Or have you run into some blocks in kind of learning these new languages that some of these CSS tools have presented?
No, that's a really good question. When I first started digging into Tachyons, so that was the first functional CSS library I started working with, there is definitely a small learning curve of maybe, you know, I was trying to implement it just to see how it worked. And it took me maybe a couple hours, if that, to kind of get a feel for how they write their classes and how the classes are put together to do certain things. But, you know, once you kind of get through that little like initial pain point, it's pretty easy. And that's one of the things that when I was working on my own implementation of it, I wanted to make sure that no matter what you're doing, all the class names are consistent, that the patterns that you use for your class naming is consistent. And I guess because I wrote it, then it wasn't so hard for me. But I also understand that that's not the case for everybody, you know? And so when I wrote Elasticsearch, one of the things I did is I actually like was able to create a compiled JSON version of all the CSS and actually use that to create like a little React search tool. So if you're looking for padding or margin, you can just enter that in the search bar and it'll tell you all the options and the classes that are associated with that. And so that's one thing I did to kind of help with that barrier. But yeah, it definitely can be a bit of a learning curve. But like I said, it's maybe an hour or two of your time to really get familiar with it.
That is not bad.
No, not at all. I was actually really surprised at how fast I got up and running with it.
And that actually ties into something that I was kind of curious about myself. Whenever I went through the coding boot camp that I did a couple of years ago, after we finished going over raw CSS and how that works and the basics of that, they introduced us to Bootstrap as our first real CSS library to play with. And that was fairly achievable for someone brand new to front-end work in general. Mm-hmm. So what I was curious about is, would you see these functional CSS libraries as equally accessible or maybe more advanced than something like Bootstrap or Foundation?
I never really thought about that before. I think I would kind of see it as like a next step. I've worked on several products over the years where Bootstrap was what they started with. And as we went on to build out the feature set of the product, we started to find ourselves battling with the various styles that we get from Bootstrap for free. And I think one of the things about working on a website where you're actually using Bootstrap is that sometimes you can just kind of tell that this is a Bootstrap-based website. I don't know if that makes any sense to you guys.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But, and so that was another reason why I wanted to have something that was it basically forced me to decide how my navigation bar looked. It forced me to think more about how my sidebars looked, or what my spacing scale is the term I like to use, basically like what you're using for your margins, your paddings, your widths, your heights, things like that. You know, make me think about what those values should be, because that's how you kind of break out of the box of having everything look like it was built in the same framework. And so I'd say it's more of a next step. If you're talking about your experience as a developer, you know, yeah, learn CSS. I think it's still incredibly valuable to know CSS. And for me, like you, David, I kind of got started and learned about this thing called Bootstrap. And you can quote me, back in the day, I said, this is like the jQuery for CSS. It's amazing. And, you know, but quickly I kind of ran into some of those issues that I mentioned earlier. And kind of forced me to think about, well, maybe I don't want to use Bootstrap. Maybe I want to, you know, hand roll my own thing. And so I'd say functional CSS, as far as like, again, your education level, is more or less like that step of allowing you to think about how we want to solve certain problems in our design.
Mm-hmm. Okay. We've gone over functional CSS some and styled components. How would you choose between the two?
Yeah, so this is actually really hard, because I actually like both approaches. I'm not one of those guys who's like, that one sucks, I wouldn't use it. I actually think both have their place. And so I know I kind of sound like the typical this versus that blog post in technology right now, but I will say that there's a few questions you should ask yourself and ask your team if you're considering changing up your approach to CSS. And one of those is what is the preferred developer experience of your team? That's something we've been talking about a lot at the company I work for. And what we mean by that is, how enjoyable is it to work in a particular code base? And so, do your developers mind writing their CSS inside of a JavaScript file, or would they prefer to have something where they can actually read the HTML and be able to see, just by looking at the elements in the classes that are being applied there, what this layout looks like or what's being applied to this layout? You know, questions like that can definitely help determine what direction you should go. Again, like I said, one thing I love is that both approaches remove the developer's burden from having to come up with like clever class names for all the different use cases or states of your components. So I think you're going to get a win-win either way there. However, if you're using React, we already have a ton going on in our JSX. And so if adding a series of class names to determine your design tips into the overwhelming for you, then maybe give style components a try, because it can definitely simplify your JSX output a little bit. If the idea of having JS handle your CSS seems a little fishy, you know, like I think one of the cons of using style components is that we're asking JavaScript to do yet another thing for us. And so if you're one of those people who has a problem with that, then give functional CSS a try. There's definitely more than one flavor out there, and I've tried out almost all of them and liked them. You know, they all have their nice tidbits inside of them. And I'll say, if you prefer to have easy theming, if you're working on a product that has to have a lot of theming involved, then I might lean more towards style components. If design consistency and design patterns is a priority, then maybe functional CSS is an option for you. With both of those scenarios, so easy theming and patterns, it's possible in both. It's just one's harder in one than the other. With style components, there are implementations of it in Vue and Ember, but they don't seem to be very widely used yet. So I'd say use it at your own risk, or contribute to open source to make them better. So I'd say for right now, if you don't mind being locked into using React, then style components is pretty cool. It also allows you to transfer your style components from one project to another without having to worry about, did we get all the CSS? Because that's a big deal. But yeah, I would ask myself those kind of questions to determine what solution I would choose.
Mm-hmm. So I am interested in the performance implications of these tools. You touched earlier on, you know, like, hey, by using tools like this, you can definitely shrink your CSS payload by a lot. So what is the actual output of using these tools look like? Do you end up with still an external CSS file, or is it a scenario where you're kind of getting some CSS injected into your markup?
Yes with one and no on the other. So with functional CSS, you typically have a CSS file that is compiled, and you know, maybe you're using SAS to do that operation for you, or post CSS. So yeah, you get an output CSS file that you have to fetch on the front end of your application. And so, and like I said, gzip, these files are between 10 and 20 kilobytes, which is remarkably small. With style components, it's a totally different approach. And so it's a totally different implementation as well. So that there's, unless you have like a normalized or perhaps a reset CSS that you're fetching on the front end, all these styles are actually, I guess I should start a little earlier. What happens is you define your styles in your JavaScript, and at runtime, the component will read the styles that you've set and then create a unique class for that instance into the head of your document. So it's basically a single class used for that component. And so it all gets compiled at runtime. So that there's no additional CSS files being injected. It's actually being created dynamically in your actual HTML document. And you know, one of the things I was first concerned about was what are the performance implications of having JavaScript do this for us? And over the last couple of years, as the technology has been maturing, performance has been an issue. But I think it was with V4, version 4 of style components that just released, I want to say September or October, they have tremendous, tremendous performance improvements to where it's rapidly fast now to where it's not really something you need to be concerned about. So I'd say, again, it's just one of those things. Can you get over the mental hurdle of having JavaScript do one more thing for you? And can you get used to the developer's ergonomic practice of writing CSS inside of a JavaScript file? You know, I know it kind of takes like a little bit of getting over that because it just seems so strange, but you also get a lot of perks by doing that with having easy access to theming. You know, you get to use some of the power of JavaScript to help build out your CSS, which can be nice as well, even if it kind of feels weird.
Yeah, I agree. The ergonomics do feel weird, but yeah, you definitely get some benefits out of doing that. So in the scenario of styled components where you're on the fly, I'm happy they kind of figured out performance, like runtime implications of that. But it seems to me that now you no longer have a basically cached CSS, right? And that you're kind of having to get that all the time on the fly. And maybe for some systems that is okay. But that's definitely something that I would miss having, is the idea that your CSS actually can be a little heavier because it will always be cached. Yeah.
That is a totally valid point. I think one thing that also comes to mind is one thing I do kind of like about the style component approach is that when you delete a component, all the styles go with it. So you no longer have orphaned styles just hanging out there that are getting shipped down to your user. And so I agree, like the caching issue is definitely a concern. But yeah, I just kind of started weigh the pros and cons and just wonder, like, you know, and again, you have to decide for your product, for your team, what works best for you. But, you know, that's also one of the pros that I would bring up is that you don't have any orphaned CSS hanging out in your application anymore, which is definitely one of the key contributors to growing bloat in your files over time.
That is very nice. Yeah.
That ties into a question that I was kind of wondering. As your projects get larger and larger, more complex, your style sheets tend to grow along with that. And one of the issues that you might have as time goes along is visual regressions, you know?
Yeah.
So styling bugs. How does using functional CSS or styled components sort of deal with that or prevent that?
With functional CSS, like I said, you have those patterns kind of built in out of the box. And so as long as you don't change the value of what a particular class renders out as, so maybe someone goes in and without thinking of it, they change the second value of your spacing scale to like 11 pixels just because they felt they needed to, like you're not really going to have visual regressions that happen over time, because the whole premise of functional CSS that those values don't change. Like those are basically meant to be seen as like immutable values, immutable classes. And so you shouldn't have style regressions that just pop up over time as people continue to work on your application. With style components, you do still have that risk unless you are setting all those same values in your theme properties that you can use within style components. So unless you're setting, you know, all your different spacing values, you know, you have a tendency to potentially run into the same issue. But actually, now that I'm thinking about it, maybe not, because with style components, every component is unique. Every component's styles are completely unique. So again, unless you're changing those core values of your themes, you should not have visual regressions that happen in a totally separate part of your application when you're working on, say, the homepage. So yeah, I would say both handle that pretty well now that I'm thinking of it.
That's cool.
So yeah, I mean, it just reminds me, like I'm working on a particular piece of software at a particular feature at my work, and we don't use functional CSS or style components yet. I'm trying to get them to move over. So again, this is all stuff I do on my free time. But, you know, I'm working on editing a component, and I had to make some pretty drastic changes to it. And I'm just like, how is this going to break on some other page that I'm not aware of, you know, yet? And so it just requires a lot more going back and checking all the various uses of this particular component. We used it like in 10 or 11 different places on different pages. And so it's having to go back each and every single one of those use cases to make sure I didn't break something. Whereas if I was using one of these two approaches, it wouldn't have really been something that I would have to be concerned about. So yeah, this is why I'm really trying to push for this in my own job as well.
yeah, really eat up your time.
yeah.
I'm interested, or want to talk a few minutes about media queries, because I think that the situation is kind of handled, but it's definitely something I've run into.
Yeah, so
CSS variables and like with post CSS tooling and so yeah, I'm interested in kind of how the media query story is handled with the setup.
With functional CSS, you tend to have basically, say I have a class that sets a margin on the top of 16 pixels, for example. If I only, and we'll just say that that class name is like MT-3. I don't know, meaning for like the third position in your spacing scale, MT stands for margin top. If you wanted to only use that style for perhaps like your medium breakpoint, then different libraries have a different way of approaching this. Basically, it'd be like, you know, your MT-3--medium or --desktop and things of that nature. So it's just additional characters that you append to the class name to target that specific media query. And also, depending on the framework that you're using, you can also target pseudo states. So whether or not this element is focused or on hover, maybe you want the background color to change. There's variations of those classes that allow you to target those specific states, which is really nice in functional CSS. And again, and it makes it so that just by looking at the classes that you're adding to your DOM, you don't have to scroll through your style sidebar to figure out like what styles are associated with this class name and why are they being overwritten by these 10 other things that we have going on. You, again, can just look at the HTML and see what's happening and what should happen if you hover over an element. With style components, you know, you can still use media queries and all that stuff right out of the box. In order to keep your media queries consistent, that way not everybody's having to hand roll these by every single time they need to use them, you can actually store your media queries in a separate JS file and just kind of import them as you need them, which again, it kind of feels like a weird developer ergonomic for your CSS, but definitely comes in handy and definitely keeps your styling consistent the more you break out the various pieces into small pieces, like small components like that. But yeah, I say that's how the two handle things like media queries and things like that.
It's interesting how these approaches are kind of pushing the web towards feeling a lot more like native development, where yeah. You know, you build your style and your visual look in conjunction with your component code, and those things are not really ever separate. You know? So I think there's some interesting influences coming in there from some native things.
Yeah, and I'll say like one thing I think about a lot, especially when I'm thinking about functional CSS, is I'm reminded of this image I saw, I don't know, posted on Twitter or somewhere on the interwebs. It was a picture of the Super Mario Brothers start screen. And it said like the entire Super Mario Brothers video game was something like 23 kilobytes. And this screen that you're looking at, which was like the start screen, was like 345 kilobytes or something. My numbers are probably off, but it was something drastic like that. And this makes me think about if you were to go back through, and there's a couple of documentaries about it, about how the loops that developers had to jump through in order to make like old video games for Nintendo Entertainment System back in the late 80s. I'm probably dating myself right now. But the things they had to go through and to think about in order to make those games work the way they did is insane. And I kind of feel like over the last, I don't know, maybe 10 or 15 years, because we've gotten such fast computers and such fast mobile devices and so on and so forth, we've kind of gone crazy. You know, I look at like video games now and like they're, you know, 100 gigabytes sometimes. And you're just like, I kind of feel like it didn't need to be a 100 gigabyte video game, you know? And I think,
but it's so much cooler because it is.
But I'm not saying it's not cool, but I'm thinking like, I think if they really took the time to pay attention to some of these details, they probably could have optimized this a little bit better. Maybe I'm just being biased, but I think about, we're kind of starting to do the same thing and talk about these same kind of problems in web development again, where it's like, just because we can have a 745 kilobyte CSS file without the world falling over doesn't mean we should. So maybe let's take into consideration that not everybody's using a, you know, cinema display on a super fast MacBook to view your application. What about the person who's using a dated Android device that hasn't been updated in 3 or 4 years. How's your product going to work on their device? And so I'm really glad that people are actually starting to take that kind of thing into consideration. And it even reminds me a little bit of another area that I think a lot about is the area of accessibility. So how do people with various impairments or disabilities use your software, and how can they use your software? But also, you know, outside of that, how do people who maybe don't have the money to have a fancy mobile device like you have use your product along those same veins? And so it kind of dips into the same vein of accessibility when you're talking about how do we optimize our products to make them usable by everyone, despite their income level and their ability to have a fancy, nice desktop or, you know, latest iPhone.
Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, definitely you think about who are the majority of users on the internet these days, and really it's emerging markets, you know, with underpowered devices, and the internet is becoming much more accessible for people to get on and browse. Mm-hmm. So you really got to keep those people in mind.
Definitely. And especially if you're creating, you know, software that you want people across around the world to be using, you know, a lot of people don't have access to, you know, crazy high speed internet like we do here in the States. And so we should probably be taking more time to consider what it looks like for those people to use our product, to where at my company, one thing we've been talking about is that we should be testing and basically starting mobile first with all of our development to see how does this work on our mobile device. And so I'm a remote developer, so we're trying to figure out how to get me mobile devices that I can actually test on our VPN. But it's definitely something that we're trying to move towards at my company as well.
Okay, that about wraps up episode 116, our final episode of 2018. Man, the year has gone by fast. We are the Front Side. We're the front-end specialists who make your large-scale application projects run smoothly by helping your team assemble the right tools and implement the right automated processes. We can ensure your projects can move forward on time and without regressions while preserving quality and long-term maintainability. If that's something you're interested in, please get in touch with us at the Front Side on Twitter or contact at frontside.io via email. Do send us any questions you might have, any topics you'd like to hear about in the future. We look forward to hearing from you. Thanks again to the wonderful Mandy Moore for producing today's podcast. You can find her on Twitter at TheRubyRep. And that's it.